Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Morning to you, Whitey.
Good morning, Daniel.
How's things?
I'm a bit sore. I actually did my first physical activity in quite a while yesterday afternoon, and I'm...
F45?
I can hardly move. No, I walked on a golf course.
You're calling that physical activity?
Oh, absolutely. Well, at the moment, I'll take whatever I can get. I've been hibernating for the last couple of months, but it was good to get out in the sunshine and have a hit. But geez, I've come up sore.
It was a glorious day.
It was spectacular. It was spectacular.
Glorious day yesterday,
mm.
Which was magnificent. I might have snuck 11 holes in myself yesterday.
Did you really?
I might have snuck
11. Whereabouts?
At La Trobe.
11?
Yeah, we just wanted to get out and spend a couple of hours out of the house. And 2 hours, 10 minutes it took us to play 11 holes.
11's a very strange number.
Well, we were going to play 9, and then we had a little bit of time up our sleeve, and then 10 and 11 sort of go back to the clubhouse.
Yeah,
so.
The par 4, dogleg, very difficult hole. Don't like that hole.
Nailed it.
11, the par 3.
Yeah, yeah. Nailed that too. So,
La Trobe's a very underrated golf course, actually.
It's a lovely course.
It gets wet in winter, as a lot of them do, those Yarra courses, but in general, it's a very nice, pretty golf course with some good holes.
So that's why 11's a good number. Perfect.
Well, there is a sort of, a lot of people will say that 12 is the perfect number for golf.
Yeah, but 12 goes back out.
No, I know, but in a general sense,
like
there's talk of, you know, 12-hole golf courses and all that sort of thing. But there's a collection of people that think the Northcote Golf Club should be about 6 holes.
Well,
because they need to have picnics on fairways
and
that sort of stuff.
A lot of picnic going on there.
Yeah. But it was a very nice day. How did you hit the ball?
Lots.
Right.
Yeah, no, first game for a while, and I had a few issues. Not too stressed about it. Wasn't really there to score. I was just there to get out of the house and enjoy the sunshine. It was absolutely glorious yesterday, and I think it's going to be similar today.
21 degrees today.
Maybe I might find another 11 hole somewhere today.
Mm.
We'll see how we get. Probably not. Adam Ramanauskas is always out there doing things in the sunshine. He's a man on a mission in the world out there. He's doing great things. He's a former Bombers champion these days, manager to the stars. He joins us on a Monday and a Friday on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Rama.
Yes, good morning. It is beautiful weather.
Any golf for you today?
No, there's no golf today.
Any golf next week, maybe?
Possibly.
That I'm not invited to?
You didn't ask me how I went.
Well, I was going to get to that after we got the golf conversation with him. Because I know, now I know, that there's a story to tell. Next week, maybe?
It's very weather-dependent. Very weather-dependent.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is, because you two are involved in the shenanigans. I'm getting the Khyber, which is not...
Well, look, you're sort of... What do they say? You keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Yes.
We're very, very lucky with the May weather we're receiving at the moment. It looked fantastic down at Warrnambool over the last couple of days.
And
the boys look like they had a great time down there and some great radio. And their Mother's Day on Sunday looks sensational for all the mums.
Yes. It's going to be a very nice activity on Mother's Day on Sunday. A lot of love to be given that day, I'm sure. Whitey, how'd you go yesterday?
That's funny you ask, actually, Daniel. You know how when it's been 2 months, which is quite sad, 2 months since I've played golf, how you forget all your bad habits and you just get out there and have quite low expectations and just swing?
That was quite good.
No, it was good. I was quite pleased. I couldn't find my pitching wedge, which is a major issue.
Where is your pitching wedge?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
How do you lose one?
No, I don't. Well, I can blame the kids. If you ever have an issue with something, you just blame the kids.
Well, that's true. That's true.
But I don't know where it is.
Kids been pitching on the new ground. Well,
no,
the
they're not allowed to
do that. Center
of excellence. No, they're not allowed to stand on it, let alone play golf on it.
Have you got the police tape around the grass?
No. Just the sign that says, keep off the grass. I couldn't find my pitching wedge. So after the fourth hole, I went back to the car to try to think, I must be in the car. I wasn't even in the car. So I don't know where it is.
Well, that's annoying.
Mm.
But you still scored immaculately.
No,
course record sort of stuff.
No, 35 points. But
that's pretty good.
So what did you go to? The lob wedge or the sand?
9-iron.
The 9.
Just crafted the ball around the course,
which is perfect for him. Imagination required.
Yeah, exactly.
Some feel and some finesse and some creativity.
Sort of the power in the swing.
Yeah. No, it's just three quarter shots and keep it low.
Gripping down on the club and all that sort of stuff.
Fashion the ball around the course.
Fashion the ball.
Just the soft landing on the green.
John Rolfe played very well again.
The buzz was out there, was he?
Is he still throwing golf clubs, or is he sort of
well? He got,
calmed
he got
that
cautioned
down.
By his.
Oh, he did.
He did get cautioned by his mates about his behaviour
and the club.
No, didn't get that far.
Okay,
it nearly did.
Yeah, it should. He's pith and clubs.
He's playing very well at the moment, John. Not as well as Alistair Nicholson, but close.
Maybe he took your pitching widgets in a tree somewhere.
Yeah, that's right.
Has been known to lose one, John. Yes, they slip out of his hands.
Oh, yeah.
It seems.
Yeah, those grips are no good.
No, it's very slippery. Got to look after them and make sure you keep updating your grips for the buzz. Well, that was good. Nice to be able to spend some time out there in the course yesterday.
It was. Conditions. It was really good. What about the effort of Josh Adokar last night?
Oh,
71 years since someone has scored 6 tries in a game of NRL, NSWL, NSW,
and we're losing him at the end of this season.
Well, just let's enjoy the magic of the 6th one last night at Amy Park.
Here it comes, Josh Munster, Nico Hines, cut-out ball, Oliver's there again, a fend, a pass, Josh Adokar dives in, we need confirmation,
It wasn't Amy Park, of course. It was up in Sydney. But the Rabbitohs, 0. The Melbourne Storm, 50. And your man, the Fox, with 6 of the best.
Well, foxes like rabbits, and that's what happened last night.
Foxes 6. Like rabbits.
Thank you, Mother, for the rabbit.
Joey picked a taro. Fantastic. Oh, where was that? Was that this morning's breakfast bite?
Breakfast bite this
morning. Oh, come off it.
He's cutting up his own audio.
Come off it, Frank. What's happening out the back there? It's almost like what's happening in Perth for Joey Pignataro.
Cutting up his own audio.
Well, goodness me. What is happening in Perth, Joey? Not sure? No, cutting up his own audio. He gets one crack at the breakfast bite because Andrew Mays is having a spell today. And he's cutting up his own audio.
Where is our man?
He's just doing things with his family. He's got got some things.
It's a wedding.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, it was a wedding too, yeah.
The wedding's tomorrow, so why he's not at work today, I'll never know. But
well,
anyway.
weddings are now events.
Well, they're 3-day extravaganzas. Yes.
Absolutely ridiculous. Yes.
Extravaganzas, the weddings these days.
You connect with people again.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just like a 1-hour sort of reconnection and sort of go home after that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
3 days. You have that. The breakfast the next day.
Yeah. And then you get into day 2, the recovery.
Haven't seen you since yesterday.
Well, but it's a different environment because you don't actually get a chance to check. You're stuck on the tables and you don't get a chance to do it. So the second day, the recovery day, is a very important day.
Terrific.
Right now. This is very important. Yeah, you sit by the pool, you're just chilling
out. Your casuals.
Yeah.
Really relax.
Yeah. Spot on. No, the 2-day extravaganza. I'm not sure about the 3-day extravaganza, but the 2-dayer is a terrific.
Well, the third day sort of, that's your... It's your recovery from people.
It's the pre-day.
Well, yeah, the pre-day, then the day, then the post-day.
The pre-day is important. Yeah, you sort of meet a few people and have a drink with them as well. Yeah, that's right.
I need to go to more weddings with you, Ramon. You seem to have this down pat. But your man, the Fox, was outstanding.
Yeah, I think it's worth recognising the fact that this team is supposed to be in transition, and it kind of is in transition. But they are doing the sorts of things that the old team used to do, piling on the points, but still being really good defensively. They're one of the flag favourites again. They're right up near the top of the ladder again. The South Sydney Rabbitohs are in the top 4, and they've smacked them twice already this year. It's quite remarkable what the Storm are able to do, and there's still speculation as to what Craig Bellamy is going to do himself as the man that's kind of navigating them through this transition. Maybe it's happening quicker than he thought, I'm not sure, but it's quite remarkable what they're doing.
Yep, pretty special team, pretty special club.
Yep, they play a system and they stick to it. Mm. They've obviously got outstanding individual players, but
we talk, Rama, to the likes of, say, Luke Parker. We spoke to Luke Afebe, we spoke to him last week, just that whole thing about the responsibility of making sure the culture continues through a transitional player period, which is what's happening now with Sydney. And, he and Josh Kennedy, the responsibility of taking it on to Errol Goulden and the next guys, because Luke Parker and Josh Kennedy got it off the likes of Brett Kirk and Jude Bolton and these sorts of things. And we can talk about that with other clubs as well. But in AFL, but in the Melbourne Storm, what they're able to do, and the young kids are the ones that are sort of generating this excitement again. It's fantastic.
And that's critical for you, because your older guys, towards the end of their career, can get very selfish and just think about themselves and getting a game or getting a new contract and the like. But they've got to, you know, they've got to still leave the place in a better position than when they started. And I think you look at, like you say, you go right back through the Melbourne Storm, and they've always been a consistent team since they came into the competition. Yeah.
They're remarkable.
This is not just a recent conversation we're having. This is all the way back to when they won their first premiership, and yep. And you look at the legacy that those guys have left.
No doubt about that. Peter Bodle in today's News Limited paper saying they understand Bellamy, who's weighed up the prospect of retirement at season's end, will coach Melbourne for one more season before transitioning into a job that will keep him at the club until his 70th birthday, which is excellent news. He's turned his back on Brisbane again and Cronulla.
How old is he?
62, I think. Yes, 62 he is.
Right.
So coach till 63 and then have a 7-year sit in the office, tell people you're awesome sort of stuff.
That's a good job.
That's a great job. Yeah. Almost as good as a job as driving cars around the track really quickly. Now, Tom Randall does that. He's one of our favourites here in the Breakfast Club. We're getting him on the way up, so when he becomes an F1 champion, he keeps talking to us. He was the Super 2 champion last year, battled testicular cancer, and is doing a great job getting through that, and he joins us on the Breakfast Club this morning. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, buddy. You're welcome here anytime. And there's even more reason to be talking to you at the moment. Not only do we just go back and just tell everyone how awesome you were with the Super 2 Championship last year, of course, but on the weekend you're in the S500 Open Wheel Series, finishing second. But it was all to a goal to get your eye in for this weekend. Tell us what's happening for the next couple of weeks in your career.
Well, firstly, I better say that the F1 dream is probably over. So I reckon we could keep doing these interviews, so I'm not getting an F1 anytime soon. But,
look, I don't know about that.
The supercars dream is definitely still alive. So speaking of supercars, I'm actually on my way to the airport now. I've got my first wildcard this year in the Supercars Championship, so I'll be joining the grid as one of the primary drivers this weekend. So I'm super excited. I'm with Tickford Racing in a Castrol-backed Ford Mustang, so... Yeah, one of three that we're doing. So this weekend's at Tailem Bend in South Australia, and then we're doing Darwin in a couple of weeks, and then we'll go to Perth to finish off in September right before we head to the Bathurst 1000. So it's an amazing opportunity for me, and I just can't wait to get stuck into it.
So it's sort of like in the NBA, it's like a 10-day contract. You get out there and show them what you can do for a little while and see what happens on the back of that. Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, pretty much. It's kind of like, I guess, getting drafted in from the VFL for a few matches, and I guess they're always judging your performance any time you kick a footy or any time you turn the steering wheel on the track. So, yeah, I'm just going to be trying to do my best. And, I mean, we've prepared as well as we can. It's like anything, isn't it? You know, the winning's sort of done back at the factory. But, look, it is very tough competition. It's one of the toughest and most competitive tin-top championships in the world, and the Americans and the Europeans put us in a high regard for that. However, I just want to do the best job I can and see what we can do at the end of the weekend.
So, Tom, you use the VFL as a comparison. Do you need to go out there now over these coming weeks and be best on ground to prove your worth, or is it just solid performances to show that you're capable of driving in the touring cars, but also quick enough to drive in the touring cars?
Mindsets to look at. I mean, I'm entering sort of halfway through the year, and I don't want to do anything silly, but you always get judged, no matter if you like it or not. You're always getting judged when you're out on the track, and because I'm aligned with Tickford, they can see all my data, and they can compare what I'm doing with the other drivers. But in saying that, it actually works really well for me, because I can also see what my teammates are doing, and it allowed me to find ways that I can improve my driving and how I go quick on the track. So I think overall, they'll definitely be looking at what I'm doing, because if they want to, if I get the opportunity to step up next year, then I need to show what I can do now. And so I don't make a goose of myself next year, but I'll be giving it my absolute all focus, and that's all I can do. And I've got a great bunch of guys on my car. My engineer is fantastic. And I think if we can just nail everything and extract the maximum out of me in the car, then there's no reason why we can't get some solid results.
So, Tom, we've spoken to you a number of times over the last couple of years, and you've had this incredible story, and a lot of it's been based around your cancer treatment. Are you back to full health?
Pretty much now, yeah, I am, yeah. So I'm back to where I was, I would like to think, before the diagnosis, so which is great for me, and it just allows me to, move on. I mean, I still have to do the scheduled checkups, but that's not too difficult. But apart from that, I can just concentrate on my gym work, my cycling, swimming, all that sort of stuff. And having the racing there allows me to concentrate. I mean, you obviously need to be fit to drive, but it's given me that motivation to get back in the gym or get back running or cycling. And I certainly feel a lot better now than I did 4 months ago.
Yeah, and because that was what I was going to ask you. I mean, it's one thing the illness that knocks you around, but it's the treatment that really knocks you around from a chemotherapy perspective. Is there anything that you can't do now that you could do before you were sick, or are you able to do all those sorts of things? And just getting that strength back into you and all those sorts of things, how much of a challenge has that been?
Well, it's funny you say that, because when you get diagnosed and they say that you've got cancer, you don't actually feel, well, I didn't actually feel ill. I wouldn't have actually known that I, had cancer, but obviously the blood test and the scans show differently. But, the chemo sort of hit me like a ton of bricks, and I couldn't even throw my dog a toy. Like, I was just so weak. And then it's just about, well, you really learn about your body in that period and what it needs and what it doesn't need. I mean, obviously, it doesn't want to have to go through the chemo. However, it's just about trying to recover and it's not about trying to get back to full strength straight away. You've got to be patient with your body. But to answer your question, I can pretty much do anything that I could do before the treatment, which is great, and it just means I can, I'm one of the lucky ones. I can live my life back to normal or to a new normal, but there's a lot of people that unfortunately can't.
Tomorrow at Caulfield, first leg of the quaddie is race number 6. It is the Thomas North Handicap over 1,100 metres. There are 8 going around, Dino, and Streetcar Stranger with Jamie Carr in the saddle. She's on the front page today as the secondary option, which is unusual for her. Normally she's the main fare.
Does that count? Because I know Turfies doesn't like models and horses on the front page of papers ahead of key race meetings.
Well, no, that was about the day before, though, so it's different.
The
it's
day
different.
After.
Yeah, day after, day before situation. Streetcar Stranger with Jamie in the saddle is favourite at tab.com.au at around about 3:30, Dino.
Yeah, I'd be interested also in Acceptor in Adelaide, Streetcar Stranger, and of course David Jolly trains from Adelaide, so it'll be interesting if they venture over. If they do, obviously a great winning chance. I'll concede here, Daniel. I think any one of the 8 could win here, and I think this would be a first for the Friday form. We'll take the field.
Oi! This is a first.
And we'll just hope for a little bit of a split, but if you were narrowing it down to 4, the 4 would be 7 Sam's Image. I think 1,100 metres is absolutely his go. Just found the 1,200 a bit far last time. He's well suited. Streetcar Stranger, if it ventures over from Adelaide. Ashlaw is just very well weighted for a horse that's won 13 races in this company. And also Titan Blinders, I think, has trialled really well and can run well fresh. But the other 4, Blaze Jowski, he trialled really well on Monday. Rocks the Castle's been going well at the trials. Someone's been going well at the trials. And Excess Funds had a jump out recently at Flemington and looked good. So the key here is that so many of them are first up and you're sort of guessing on their fitness a bit. So I'm tipping Sam's Image, but I'll take the field.
All right, we're taking the field, Quinny. This has never happened before. It's a very exciting moment in the history of the Friday form. What's that going to do to the market? They'll be coming from everywhere to back everything now.
Look, it's very exciting. It guarantees we get the first leg of the quaddy, and it basically makes me redundant because I like to ask Dino about horses that he hasn't put in the quaddy, so he's really stitched me up here.
That's
but at
the
this
only
stage,
reason I
Streetcar
did it.
Stranger, a $3.30 favourite in from $3.50, has been the early firmer. Blaze Jowski, a $4 second elect. Excess Funds, $5.50. Dino, as you alluded to, Streetcar Stranger is a dual acceptor at this stage. Are you hoping the horse goes to Adelaide or Caulfield? Because if it races at Caulfield, you've got it in the hunt, but is pretty short. Do you think he's under the odds and therefore there could be a bit of value in that field leg?
Yeah, I think so. I think he might be the one that, you know, I've tipped him for second, and he can certainly win. But he's I think he's a little bit well found for, you know, I think that's the Jamie Carr factor. He drops in weight off a win last start and gets Jamie Carr, and that's you know, that's a constant with the markets, that she's shaping the markets with when she gets on horses.
Well, we've never seen it before, but it's very exciting. What it does do, though, is make our man Adam Ramanauskas redundant when we get that sort of action. There are no numbers to reread, Rama, but can you say
field.
It for me?
Field. Oh,
beautifully said.
Well done, Rama. Well done. Field in the first, all eight for the first leg of the quaddie tomorrow at Caulfield Race number 6. The second leg is going to be very important then, I reckon, because we've already got the first one. We can guarantee you that. It's over the 2,000 metres, three-year-old affair, Dino. There are 14 going around, and at the top of the order, number one, Horrifying. Mark Cavanaugh, with, again, Jay Carr in the saddle, is a very firm favourite at 270 at tab.com.au.
Yeah, and he's the one to beat, Daniel. He was terrific at Flemington. He probably cost himself as much as anything, wanting to just roll about under pressure. But he made a long, searching run from back in the field, and I thought he ran very well. I think from a good draw here, he'll race a lot closer to the speed, and I think he's the one to beat. I think the form out of Flemington is the right form. Redwood Shadow was really good in that race as well, and he drew wide that day as well. He had to make the long run and was very good. My Squeeze Louise for Dennis Pagan. She led in that race and led at a really fast speed, like you know, absolute elite speed, and everything else around her dropped out and ran nowhere. She still battled on and ran fourth. It was a tremendous run. As long as that run hasn't flattened her, she's in the mix. Five, Red Santa, is the one coming out of left field off a maiden win, but just these Ma Eustace horses, once they get up in the staying distances, they train anything very well, but their strike rate 2,000 metres beyond is just phenomenal. And I think Red Santa will run really well. And Ruba has got the good form, unlucky at Bendigo, behind its stablemate Lakiro and also the ATC Derby winner Explosive Jack, and then ran well again behind Lakiro and the St. Ledger winner through Irish Eyes. So he's got very good form. He's just coming back in distance. So I think they're the five main chances, but I am with the favourite, Horrifying.
All right, Quinny. Horrifying's pretty short and number one selection for Dino. What is it for you?
Yeah, Horrifying has been a firmer. 290 into 250, the market leader at that quote. Redwood Shadow, a 420 second elect. Early money for the Pagan-trained My Squeeze Louise, who's been 11 into 750. Dino, you look at Horrifying's form and it reads one win from nine starts, including a placing at group level, but you could almost make a case that the horse has really only had two runs, and they were the last two runs with the shades on, where he's been terrific. Big win at Sandown, narrow defeat at Flemington. As a result, he's been 290 into 250. Do you still think that represents a bit of value because he could have a lot more upside than his opposition?
I wouldn't want to take any shorter. I think you know, all the form ties in. Redwood Shadow wasn't that inferior to him last start, and comes up with a better draw this time as well. So they've got, you know, sort of similar progressions. But as you said, with Horrifying, the other thing is he was gelded at the end of last campaign. He's now a proper racehorse. He's doing everything pretty well right. And I actually think his sire, Shocking, might have won this race on his way through to the Queensland Derby. And I wouldn't be surprised if Horrifying's on a similar path.
Well, I noticed that Horrifying is your number one selection, Quinny. Asterisk. Got the asterisk next to it in his selection category at the Herald Sun today. So you must be very pleased about all this.
More relieved, I think, is the word.
Just nice work.
Flicking through the Queensland Derby market to try and find the price there for Horrifying as well.
Well, you can give us a little bit of insight into that a little bit later on if you like. Rama, it's not the field.
Not the field.
This leg. You need to read us some numbers, please, for race 7, the second leg of the quaddie.
1, 2, 10, 5, and 4.
1, 2, 10, 5, 4. Let's get to the third leg. Over the 1,600 metres, another three-year-old affair, Dino. There are 13 going around because you can rule a line through spooning. Number 12 has been scratched, so no spooning for you. So 13 go around tomorrow at Caulfield. And number 3, Agreeable for the Freedmans, with no jockey just at the minute, Dino, which is going to be a difficult task, is favourite at tab.com.au at around about $3.90.
Yeah, another one of the dual acceptors also in the Adelaide Guineas tomorrow. She's got a great chance here if she runs. I think that number one, Real Sensation, I just think he's a really good horse. He should have three wins in a row next to his name. He's won two, and he should have won at Moonee Valley in the one that he ran second. It'll need a good ride from T.O. Nugent from a wide draw, but he'll get back anyway, naturally. And I actually think he's on a path to the Queensland Derby as well, so we might be getting some insight into some of the horses heading north. And I think he can win again. He's got a great chance to beat Five Volator, who, that was a good win at Cranbourne. They went along at a really solid speed, and he kept going well there. And down to 53.5 with the claim for Matty Cartwright, I think he's got a great chance. Agreeable certainly goes in, if she's there. Eight, Hengrown. This is a one of the Northern Hemisphere bred Danny O'Brien sort of projects.
Yes.
So he's a little bit immature because he's 6 months behind some of these horses as such, but he won well on debut. He was a little bit of a problem child at the barriers there and was scratched a few weeks ago, and then he won on debut. He looks a nice horse. And Seven Iron Edge, I think back to 1600 off a reasonable speed, he can run quite well. But I just think Real Sensation and Volator are both really good odds here and good chance to provide some value.
What are those odds, please, Nicholas, for the third leg of the quaddie?
Well, Real Sensation currently a $6.50 chance and on the third line of betting at that quote, and Iron Edge an $8 chance. The market leader is Agreeable. There's been a move for Mozzie Monster. She's caught the eye her last two runs when running second to Ana Visto, making late ground on both occasions. Dino, she's not in the quaddie here. What's the concern? Is it a racing pattern, or unlike a lot of people, you're not convinced the step to 1600 will be an automatic success?
Yeah, a bit of everything. I think she's a fair chance of missing the start and getting back. It'll be interesting to see how the pattern is. I think that if she's back with Real Sensation and they make their runs together, he'll be better than her. They're both, you know, off pace runners. So had to take a risk somewhere, and I think she's got enough weight and etc. to make her a bit vulnerable.
And with Agreeable, would you prefer if they stay here with Agreeable or go over to Adelaide?
I think if you want to back Agreeable somewhere, you'd rather back her here. I thought she looked as though the trip to Adelaide last time really lightened her off. So I don't know if she needs another trip to Adelaide, and maybe this is the good option.
All right. I noticed with interest, Nick, that you ask about Mozzie Monster because Mozzie Monster's your on-top selection and not in Dino's five numbers.
I did notice that also.
Is that now panic stations?
Yes. I think panic's probably the best way to describe it. But what's done is done, Daniel.
That is true. And the numbers are done for the third leg of the quaddie for Dino on the Friday Forum. Rammer, can you recap them for us, please?
1, 5, 3, 8, and 7.
Race number 9 is the last leg of the quaddie. That's what we need to get to because we've got three legs down. We've got one to go, Dino. It's 1,200 metres, three-year-olds again. They're everywhere, three-year-olds tomorrow at Caulfield. But it looks to me like it's a pretty straightforward sort of setup. All right, number 4, Ayrton, two-time winner, Mick Price, Mick Kent Jr., Jamie Carr in the saddle, is $1.55 at tab.com.au. Is it pretty straightforward, this one?
It might be more certain than the field leg, Daniel.
Oh, really?
Wow. He is a seriously good horse, Ayrton. He's resuming here. He's trialled up twice. He looks to be going really well. And you'll see him in big races in the next 6 months. To what level, I don't know. But, I think he's definitely a Group 1 horse in the making. So when you see them in this sort of grade, they're probably, they should be $1.50. He should win. It's one out in the quaddie for me.
Oh.
The main dangers, if you could call them that, are The Big Easy, number 8, 2, Yulong Command, and 10, River Knight. They'll all run well, but they're running into a very, very good horse here.
Righto. So one out in the quaddie, got the field in the first leg, and one out in the last leg. Number 4, Ayrton. Quinny, are they jumping out of everywhere to back this thing?
They certainly are. He's very popular. He's been well back to win the Stradbroke this campaign, where he's a $5 favourite, but he dominates the market tomorrow at $1.50. Hopefully can get the job done. It's a big gap then to Curran, who's a $9 second elect, The Big Easy at 12, the win, and 270 the place, has been the second best backed runner. Two questions on Ed and Dino. Do you anticipate this horse can propel to Group 1 level with the Stradbroke this campaign? And the quaddie, it's going to have to pay $200 to break even. I know this sounds a little bit sacrilegious, but Do you think it does even look a good day for a quaddie, or do you think taking a couple of your selections throughout the course of the day, maybe into doubles into Ayrton, would be the better play to potentially get that sort of a quote, which would need to be a 200 break even for the quaddie with the one out in the last?
So, Quinny, we've just wasted the last 20 minutes.
What the hell are you on about, Quinny?
Thank you for that. Well, I'd look at it the other way. In essence, we're having 200 on Ayrton. And hoping it pays 300, which is makes it $1.50. So anything above 300, we're getting better than the price currently at tab.com.au.
Yeah, stop stitching us up, Quinny. We're trying to have a good time here.
Just helping with the staking plan for Dino's Legion of Fans.
Righto. So you got
he
nothing
did
to add.
The quarter yesterday at the ball.
My word, he did, as he always does. And he got last week's Saturday one at 8 grand too, just by the way, with the Saturday edition. Now, by the way, we need to make an alteration.
We do.
To race number 8, the third leg, because that's pretty straightforward, the last one, number 4, straight out in the last leg. Dino, you got some information about Agreeable.
I've had a very strong push that she's currently in Adelaide, so she probably can't win at Caulfield
tomorrow.
It's
going to be tough.
So the medical sub comes in again, and it is Mozzie Monster, Nicholas Quinn's top selection.
All right. That's Mozzie Monster comes in for the third leg, and number 3 goes out if Agreeable is in Adelaide. Now, there's the feedback coming through. Hi, guys. Missed the quaddie numbers as I was copying a spray from the coach for not scoring more tries last night. Can you please repeat them? Thanks. That's from the Fox. Great to have you listening, Josh, through the morning. And then this one. Hi, lads. Sorry, slept in after a hard week. Can you please repeat the quad, says Bill. Now, it's been a long week for a lot of people with the ball, Rammer. Can you go through the numbers again for the quaddie tomorrow at Caulfield?
Yes, I can. So race 6 is the field. Race 7, 1, 2, 10, 5 and 4. Race 8, 1, 5, 2, 8 and 7. And then finally race 9, number 4.
All right, they are your numbers for the quaddie tomorrow at Caulfield on a Friday morning. Let's have a look at the formula bet, Dino. Who are you playing for this weekend and what are your selections, please?
Yeah, for John Spears of Lara, and for John, I'm very glad you're our contestant. I'm very sorry I couldn't find you more value, but I wanted to get you some money, and I think we can. $40 a win, race 2, number 10, Exelman. $40 a win, race 9, number 4, Ayrton, and $40 on the all-up of the pair, race 2, number 10, into race 9, number 4, for John Spears of Lara.
All right, Quinny, what's that come to, please?
Oh, I love this. First, Dino's added my runner into his quaddie, and now he's taken a multi that resembles my sort of odds. Exelman at $2 favourite, Ayrton at $1.50. The all-up comes to
$3.
$3. I'm tired.
$3 for the formula bet. That's all right. We'll take the profit and run. Let's get to the Rammer Ruffy.
Ready to sting the bookies? This is Rammer's Ruffy for the all-new Kia Stinger. Fine-tuned for Australian conditions. Book a thrill ride and experience the new Kia Stinger today.
All right, let's find the Ruffy today, the Kia Stinger Ruffy. Where do we go this week, Dino? We're all over the country at the moment.
Yeah, we're going to go to the Group 1 race tomorrow at Morpheville, the TAB South Australian Derby. Race 7, I think that the Mar Eustace stable have got a great chance of winning the Derby. They've got the favourite, Explosive Jack, but I think Let's Crack a Deal will run a fantastic race. And I think at the good odds on offer, third up from a spell, ran very well in the VRC Derby. I think he's got a great winning chance.
For the Rabbit.
Thank you, Joey. Living prime time he is. What are those good odds that Dino's talking about, Quinny, please?
Currently 14 the win, 370 the place.
Now, the Kangaroos aren't falling from grace, Boomer, but we thought that your pipes might have got them over the line last week on Sunday. Gee, you looked all right. It's coming together. You're seeing things.
Yeah.
Tom Goldstein in here the other day, and he was talking about it, but you've obviously been watching almost from afar, not having to live it out there in the moment, just watching it from afar. Are you seeing the right things?
Yeah, absolutely. I think David Noble is a super coach. I thought he was a better coach when he was sitting next to me on the bench because he wasn't so animated and so boisterous to me on the phone that he goes upstairs now. And after round 3, he was started getting a bit angry at me. He's very good. We have got a list that is very, very young. I mean, we're playing our first 3 draftees are playing at the minute, which is fantastic, getting some game into them. The thing is, we're not the best team in the competition by any stretch of imagination. We've got 5 really key injuries as well. And when I say key, Luke McDonald won our best and fairest last year. Robbie Tarrant is our Pillar down back, pretty much our skipper down back. Jed Anderson, who's so important to us, it's not funny.
Hard and tough inside.
Yeah, we're missing that hard back pocket player. I know Kyron Hayden's not a household name, but he gets a job done every week. And there's one more, Trent Jermont, still coming back from injury now. So there's five right there. And I have missed one. I'm just trying to think who it is as I go. You take five decent players out of a team that's not the best team in the competition, makes a huge difference. So I think we're on the right track. Last week in the first half, it was excellent. We're beating a team that hasn't lost a game by, was it 12 or 19 points at half time.
Yep.
We had a poor third quarter. So at the minute, we're just not doing it for long enough, good enough for long enough. And once we learn to do that and we start playing three and a half quarters, we're going to challenge some really good teams.
So it's one of the key games this week for,
yeah, absolutely,
for a lot of reasons. And the situation at Collingwood, I mean, the list manager quit yesterday. Nathan Buckley's under enormous pressure, and your 17th v 18th at Marvel Stadium tomorrow at 4:35 for Check Your Local Guides. And then there's a whole Darcy Moore conversation. There's articles in the paper today that he's going to go back. Mick McGowan's quoted the saying, well, his article today is keep him forward, challenge the ball movement, but keep him forward and try and win the game rather than try and save it. So there's a whole lot of storylines going on from their perspective, but also from your perspective. Are you bullish? Like, do you go into this thing and we can smell some blood in the water here?
To be honest with you, I actually go into every game because I see the hard work that they put in pre-season and the hard work they put in during. And people might call me naive, and that's okay. But North Melbourne and my club, and I'm there a couple of times a week, and I see the hard work these boys are doing. So I go into every game sitting and listening to the coach and his instructions, and I think we can win pretty much every game. Now, that's not going to happen. I understand that. But this game is huge. Collingwood have got a lot of pressure on them externally. You just mentioned all those factors. So internally, is that pressure building up as a player? I dare say it probably is. And nobody expected the Kangas to make the finals. I think a few people would have picked Collingwood to make the finals wildly at the start of the year. So
a few, yeah.
It's... Yeah, I think the pressure's on them. Our boys can just go out and play and see what happens in there. Like I said, if we serve up what we did in the third quarter, we'll probably get our pants pulled down again. But if we serve up what we did in the first half, we are a massive chance against a lot of teams, not only Collingwood. Jared Pollock and Aiden Corr, another two that were around the team at the minute. So,
I want to throw something else at you, particularly to you, Half,
right.
Because I think it's more relevant to you and maybe to Boomer. The Sydney situation where they're coming down to play Melbourne tomorrow night without their key assistant coaches. Because of the COVID situation in New South Wales, three of the assistant coaches dined at a hotspot. So only Jeremy Laidler and there's one other that are coming down to be able to coach them. So
Charlie? Is Charlie coming down?
Charlie Gardner? Well, he's head of footy or
head
whatever.
Footy, yeah.
So, but Dean Cox won't be there. Don Pike won't be there.
Jared McVeigh.
And Jared McVeigh won't be there because they dined at a cafe that was deemed as a hotspot. How much of an impact is that going to have on John Longmire? I mean, half of you coach.
Yeah.
I don't know. Three of you can have a crack at it. But what sort of impact is that going to have on the team?
It would be an inconvenience. But I think you can manage. You can almost make it a bit of a thing and just have an old school sort of one out coach situation. I'll coach today, and you get the quarter time breaks. You bring them all in that, and you talk to them as the groups rather than having to break them up into those little subgroups. I think you actually make a cool thing out of this as a one off, and make it quite of a theme for your boys
or computer Zoom style.
Get on the Zoom.
Ooh, so watching broadcast.
So before the game, you've just got the laptop there and you've got your group. So Jared McVeigh's midfield, let's call it. He's got all the midfield group. He's standing there on Zoom.
Technology, it's where it's
technology.
Going.
Technology. Could be a possibility. Oh, but during the game is when you're talking about.
Well, because, I mean, does an assistant coach have a bigger impact in the lead up to the game or actually on game day in seeing things, those extra pair of eyes on the senior coach? Because it has to be a disadvantage if you haven't got three of your key coaches in the box with you, I would have thought.
So everything is set up pre-game, right? So everything, the stoppages are done and everything like that, and your little tweaks to your game plan. But on game day, the coach is watching certain things, and then he'll throw, if Rammer's my midfield coach, he'll say, Rammer, what's happened at stoppages? What's the score? We're losing 6-1. Why? Oh, because they've got a sweeper, he's coming into the contest. So there will be a part of the game where the coach is going to have to watch a lot more. But I tend to agree with Half a little bit too. Sometimes we complicate our game.
Yeah.
There's so much going on everywhere. Maybe it's a great chance for us just to go, you know what, this is how it's going to be this week. And I'm going to watch. I'll take care of the stoppages. And you say two more coaches are coming down?
No, they've only got two assistant coaches to complement.
Yeah,
they might use Brett Kirk as an assistant coach this week. He's gone into the development and welfare, so he might come into an assistant coaching role.
Most of those football managers, we've got Brady Rawlings. He could easily sit into the chair because he's been an assistant coach before. He could sit in the coach's chair and say, yep, this is how we're doing it now.
Tom Harley might take the defence, for example.
Which he has before.
It'd be interesting to see how they structure it
up. You know what's interesting? John Longmire narrowly avoided being in the same situation.
I know.
He got to the cafe just after 1 p.m. So the exposure time was 12:30 to 1 p.m.
He got
to the cafe just after 1.
That would have been interesting. Brett Kirk would have had to be the runner and the coach.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because
you love that, Burbo. Perfect.
That's right. There was a chance there earlier in the week the game wasn't going to be able to be played.
Yeah.
That's how fine it is up there at the moment.
Even the Essendon GWS match, that's been pushed back a little bit so Essendon can get in and out on the day. But I imagine the AFL would have liked to have changed that game to Melbourne. But because there's games at Marvel and the MCG, there's. Where are they going to play that game? They couldn't play it anywhere in Victoria, I don't think. Well, unless they had a doubleheader, for example.
Well, that might have been the way to go.
They've actually got to start thinking about this because this is going to be around for a little while. So there's going to be some left field stuff happen. I reckon they've got to start looking and saying, you know what, we're just shifting it. There is a doubleheader. It's going to be an hour and a half apart.
Could you play a game at 1:45 at the MCG and then 7:30 at the MCG that night?
Can you bump in and out? You can.
Yeah, you can. They reckon it takes about 2.5 hours to bump out and reset for the next game. So you could do that, no doubt.
Absolutely.
I think it's something they'll start looking at for the future, absolutely, because of the COVID situation.
He'd love that, just be at the MCG all day.
All day.
I think it's one of those things that it's been a sort of a reminder to everybody that, as you said, Burma, it isn't gone. And we've seen the situations... in Perth over the last couple of weeks and, Fremantle are playing in Brisbane. They're lucky that they'd had consecutive home games, so it would have been a third game in Perth in a row. So it's not going to affect them. They also can have the game later in the year swapped, so it's not going to have any disadvantage to Fremantle at all. So that's their fortune in that situation. But now it's in Sydney. It's just, It's I don't know it's sobering is probably the word that we're not out of it yet.
And people will go, oh, we overreact to one case, but we overreact because we don't want to be 6 months in lockdown again. Now,
and cost the economy.
But we're more hypersensitive of it here in Victoria because of what we went through last year.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway,
I'll tell you what it has done. It's made things a little bit easier through this phase of the fixture for the Brisbane Lions. They played, obviously, last week at home against Port Adelaide. The flip game this weekend is against Fremantle at the Gabba. Then they play at Metricon, so they stay in Brisbane. And then they play two home games against Richmond and the Giants. So they're in Queensland for 5 weeks in a row. Four of those at the Gabba.
So the game against Fremantle was round, 20-odd-something?
It's 21, I think.
20, well, it's
so two, would you prefer TBC, to be... Because that Collingwood game, remembers, flipped too to the Gabba late in the year. So I think that's round 20.
Mm.
So would you prefer to be at the Gabba later in the season?
22.
Or would you prefer to be at the Gabba or in Queensland now for 4 weeks?
Right now where Brisbane sit, I think it's now because they get off to the greatest start.
Banks and wins.
Yeah.
Banks and wins. You've got five in a row. You say, let's win four. Yeah. Brisbane will probably be saying, let's win five. But if you can win four of those five, it starts looking finals again. Everybody's up and about. So I would say now for me, for the Brisbane Lions.
So even with the flipped Fremantle game late, that goes back to Perth, they've still got three of the last four.
They always had that great finish, Brisbane.
So it's not a bad place to be. Brisbane Lions, they can bank the wins in this window, this little four-week or five, if you count last week, then life will be okay. Well,
and that's the thing with tonight's game between Richmond and Geelong. There's a massive bounty on this game because of where they both sit on the ladder. We still feel that they are probably top four teams. They're the grand finalists from last year. But whoever wins this game gets a break on the other. And the loser, even though Richmond won last week, they find themselves just in that mess of teams that are sort of fighting the lower part of the eight. So
very similar to our footy tipping, Whitey.
We're not talking about that.
So the loser of this game will most likely be two games out of the top four.
Well, that's my point. Yeah. It becomes a real fight.
So let's have a bit of a look at it. Dustin Martin, Nick Flostone come in for the Tigers. Grimes, Naish and Cochin at this stage out. Trent Cochin out for a little while with that hamstring, which is a concern for them. Sam Sam Simpson, Sean Higgins come back in for the Cats. Myers is out crook. Jordan Clark's omitted. Surprised by that. And Quentin Narkle has been omitted at this stage as well. Liam Baker plays 50. Jaden Short plays 100. Gary Rowan plays 150. The milestones in this game. Continuing on that conversation, Whitey, about the significance of the outcome. What we saw last week from Richmond, if you've seen that from Geelong's perspective, Rammer, are you getting a bit, oh boy, they're up and about the Tigers. This might be a bit more difficult than perhaps we thought 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, you think about it. Whoever loses, they're 4-4.
Yeah.
After 8 rounds. Whoever wins puts themselves that sort of 5-3 with a little bit of a buffer. I'll throw it to you guys. Did you see enough from Richmond in the second half to think, yep, that's going to get it done? Or was it more about the Bulldogs? And then from a Geelong perspective, have they done enough over the last 3 weeks? Isaac Smith half said to us during the week, they feel they've turned the corner.
Yep.
While they didn't win against Sydney, they feel that the last 3 weeks is where they want to be. Has that been good enough to beat Richmond? It's a really difficult one. Well, I'm not sure whether we quite know whether either team is back where they were last year.
Mm, Geelong are a little bit up and down, aren't they? I've seen them play against the Kangas down at their home ground. They weren't fantastic.
They had 35 scoring shots that day.
They weren't fantastic. I didn't think Rammer. That was just my opinion on the Cats that day. But they've got some play. Cameron comes into the team. Higgins comes back into the team. I think they're both super, super, super important in terms of their recruiting, the way they want to play their style of football. Last week, I thought Richmond were excellent. I don't give Richmond credit very often because I don't like them because all my mates barrack for them and my uncles. And they've been so good for so long. But I thought Richmond were fantastic last week. And the Bulldogs were a tiny bit disappointing for me. The start they got off to, I thought, gee, this is going to be a ripper game. But the Tigers were good, and I think they're nearly back to where they were.
That said more about Richmond last week, that they can still... Oh, see, this is probably the wrong way to put it. That still match with the best.
Yep.
They are the best, but the best this year have been obviously Melbourne, Western Bulldogs, and Port Adelaide. So,
well, everyone's waiting for them to drop off, though, Rama.
Yeah.
Right. So we've said the Bulldogs have been fantastic. They won their first 5 games. They're going to knock Richmond off, no worries, because Richmond have got to fall off the perch sometimes. But when? When's it going to be? Is it going to be this year? Is it going to be next year?
Yeah.
It's going to be the year. Are they going to fall off the perch? Who knows?
See, the way to beat Richmond is take away their surge game, which clearly the Bulldogs could not do in that second half. They got their surge game going, and they were off. It was that wave of Richmond runners that you see, is that wave of Richmond defenders pushing up and squeezing you. And now they get back, obviously, Martin and Vlosten. I think Vlosten is probably their most important player. Martin's their best player, no doubt about that. But Vlosten allows then Asprey, Bolter, Grimes, Broad, those guys then to start dropping off.
Yeah.
He drops off. And it's just their defence then works back as a system and as a team again.
And that's where they score.
They've been exposed a little bit in that area when he hasn't played because teams have been able to isolate their defenders one-on-one and get hold of them. So if Vlosten comes back now, he should sort all that out.
So Grimes goes out, Vlosten comes in, so they lose one.
But Grimes is more locked down than Vlosten. Yeah.
Does roll off into the space a bit, interestingly. But when you've got my thing with Richmond is if you can isolate their defenders and make them defend you one on one, which Geelong might be able to do with their forward structure.
Yeah. Hawkins,
and
Cameron.
The Cameron factor plays a big part in this tonight, I reckon, for this game.
Rowan,
because they do have to defend, and Rowan's been really busy in the last couple of weeks as well. So I think there's an element to this that plays into the hands of the Cats, but I'm with, was it you, Boomer, saying you're just not quite sure about the Cats
just a little bit up and down.
I'm not 100% convinced on what I've seen just yet, and I know Isaac said what he said, Whitey, but I think you want to see it against Richmond before you start to believe
Geelong convinced me against West Coast a couple of weeks ago.
Did they?
Oh, yeah.
100-point win?
At GMSBA? They were outstanding.
You were there that day.
Yeah, and then you look at the way West Coast were able to dismantle Fremantle last week. West Coast are a good team.
No, I agree with that.
They are a good team.
But they can throw in those sort of games.
Yeah, they can. But Geelong to play the way they did gives me great confidence that it's nearly there.
See, because I'm a bit like Rammer half on Geelong. I kind of really like that. And the doubts on Richmond are there because they lost 3 times in 4 weeks.
Yep.
And on 2 of those occasions, they got beaten quite badly against Melbourne and also Sydney. So that's why there's the doubt on the Tigers. It's not what they've done previously. It's the fact that through that month, they only won once.
It's if you can put a virus in Richmond's system.
Yeah.
Western Bulldogs couldn't do that in the second half. Once that system got rolling It's very, very hard to stop that. And we'll talk to Jack McRae about that when we speak to him shortly. But they started that surge game again. Once you've got to stop that surge. Once they get that going, their tails are up and off they go.
Well, this game
dictate the field.
This game's they play contrasting styles. These teams, and you just mentioned that Richmond surge the ball and they start from half back from turnover. They score the fourth most in the competition. But on the other hand, Geelong concede. I think they're second best in the competition for conceding from turnover. So the contrasting
defenders sit back.
So it's contrasting styles. So it's going to be and stoppages. I think Geelong score from stoppages, and then Richmond concede the least from stoppages. So it's going to be a huge game.
It's fascinating because we've got the two grand final teams from last year, the two of the heavyweights of the competition for the last 5 or 6 years, and we're not sure on both of them going into this game as to where they're at.
And we're not sure. Fascinating. We're not sure on both of them because they're playing against each other.
No, like I think we're not sure whether they're back to the levels they were at last year. Yep. I think.
Makes sense. I agree, because I agree with Geelong. Richmond, I'll sort of start seeing where they are again. But
I mean, they were super in the second half, Richmond.
Yeah.
But they have got a lot of players out.
They do, but they seem to be pretty good, even though they've got a lot of players out, because they're a pretty good footy club, full stop. Righto, who wins then, Whitey?
Wow, I'm coming off a low base, aren't I?
1 from 9 is not fantastic, but today's your day.
You know what? I've been thinking about this all week, and I keep flopping, and I'm going to land with Geelong.
Geelong for Whitey. Boomer, who wins?
Oh, all right. Let's go with Geelong this week.
Geelong for Boomer. Rama, you're selecting?
Cats.
Oh, there you go.
I'll be getting back.
It's confident, wasn't it?
I'll be getting back one on the field here. I'll be tipping the Tigers, thank you very much.
I like the inclusion of Sean Higgins. Richmond don't tag.
I like the inclusion of Dustin Martin.
Yeah. I'm saying kicking that football inside forward 50 to Hawkins and Cameron.
Surely they go after
that's
Martin.
The last piece of Geelong's puzzle now is Dangerfield coming back in, which is still, I know, a couple of weeks away. But he's a pretty good player. But Higgins tonight, I think, should be able to find a fair bit of the football.
They go after Martin. I know he went off the other week with a bruised eye, whatever.
They never really do.
They had 8 possessions halfway through the third quarter when he went off. They got to go to him, negate him from inside and outside. He's the most important player for Richmond. They've got to take
him. They completely stuffed that up in the grand final.
Well, Guthrie sort of half went to him, didn't he?
Well, it's the communication.
I'll play on you, but I'm not playing on you.
Look at the way Melbourne played Dustin Martin with Hibbert.
Yeah,
that's there's the blueprint.
Absolutely.
In front of everybody.
Jax McRae is from the Western Bulldogs. He's a champ from the Bulldogs these days. He doesn't wear the number 2, but he gets a lot of the footy. Jack, good morning.
Morning, Blue. Thanks for having me.
Good on you, buddy. Nice to have you with us. What'd you learn from last week? Let's get straight to it. What'd you learn from last week against the Tigers?
Obviously, they're reigning premier for a reason. Their pressure was amazing. And, they're a quality football team, you know, through their best players all the way down to the 22nd. So, yeah, it was a great contest, great night at the MCG. I thought we played some good footy at times, but obviously the third quarter was probably the critical quarter where we probably let them into the game, and it was a bit hard from there.
Yeah, one of the conversations post that, Jack, was that it was a great opportunity a third of the way through the season for the Doggies to learn a few lessons and understand where you have to be the best team in the business, because it was so good up until that point for the footy club. What were the learnings out of it in terms of the review? Did you focus on the good stuff or the learnings in the second half?
Yeah, obviously you always focus on a bit of both. So, from the good stuff in the first half we were playing the footy we wanted to play and probably could have been even further ahead on the scoreboard. So, and then obviously after half time, just how you just got to respect and know that teams are going to keep coming at you, and the way we've started the season, we're probably going to get a bit more of that this year with teams really taking it up to us and hunting us like that. So you got to look at it as a good lesson, and hopefully next time a big challenge like that comes, we'll be better prepared for it.
We'll talk about the game against Carlton shortly, but just one last one on the Tigers. When they got that surge game going in that sort of third quarter, it looked like sort of late in the second quarter, but obviously then in the third quarter, is there a way to stop it?
Yeah, I think, being a midfielder, it obviously starts with a contest and, probably simply just the centre bounce each time. They probably won 4 or 5 in a row, which, really gave them a lot of territory and momentum. So that's probably the most simple way to stop it, is to get the ball in our forward half and reset from there. So that was probably the most disappointing part for us in the third quarter, was that we probably didn't help out our backs and the rest of the team in that aspect.
I was interested listening to David Teague yesterday, Jack, talk about how it could be a bit of a shootout this week. Both teams like to move the ball quickly. Both teams like to score. Do you see it being played that way?
Maybe. I think the Essendon Carlton game definitely was. It was a pretty high-scoring game and good to watch. So it could end up like that. But I think, you know, this season we've been very good defensively as a team. I think we've probably allowed the least score, which is something that, you know, most really good teams do. So something that we've really prided ourselves on so far. So hopefully it's just a one-way shootout would be nice.
Yeah. And what is it about Carlton? Because they got you last year. The year before it was a close win when they weren't travelling overly well. There's something about the Blues. They really find a way to get under your skin a little bit.
Yeah, no, they've been really good against us. I think they did beat us in 2019 earlier in the year.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
We obviously have a great respect for them, and obviously they've got some really strong midfielders that are now coming through, obviously, in Walsh and Cripps have been there for a while now. So, they've given us some challenges, and it's going to be another big challenge on Sunday.
And your role this year, I mean, you've been absolutely brilliant, very consistent, playing at your normal really, really high level, but has it changed at all with Adam Treloar coming in? And then does it change again a little bit with Josh Dunkley going out with that injury?
It's pretty similar with Ads coming in. And I thought up until Dunks went down, we had a really good mix. You know, we were all playing that inside mid role, but we had really good chemistry and mix with, you know, at times who was going in and who was playing more of that outside role. And it seemed to be working really well. So obviously Dunks is a big loss for that, but on the weekend it was pretty similar to what it's been, but we probably didn't, replace Dunks' heavy inside work as well as we could have, which obviously, as I touched on in that third quarter, we probably missed a touch of that.
Jackson, tell us a little bit about the Buku Kamis. I think I've said that right. He was in the 2018 yes. draft with Bailey Smith. Bailey Smith's coming up to his 50th game now, so Buku's had to wait his time. What do you expect and what can we expect from him?
It's an amazing story, and where he's come from and to get to where he is now. And he's an absolutely terrific young person, firstly. But he's been playing some amazing footy, especially probably the back end of last year and especially the first 6 to 8 weeks this year. He's probably that third tall defender that, you know, helps in the air. He's clean with ball in hand, and he's quite athletic as well. So, looking to just see him play his role, as cliche as it sounds, but he's quite a talent as well.
So was that highlighted last week? Obviously, that tall defender, Riewoldt and Tom Lynch. Last week, your defence has been pretty solid, but last week it was a little bit of an issue.
Yeah, I think, as I said, I think we've probably been scored against the least out of in the competition. Yeah. So, you know, we do defend as a whole team, and I know people like to talk about individuals at times, but it was probably on, as I said, the midfielders and forwards as well that didn't help out the defenders in, you know, some of the ball that came in was pretty hard to defend. So, he'll slot into that back six and hopefully help back there.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.